You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Discovery announced a 10% decline in half-year profits in the middle of its forecast range, largely due to currency volatility, and the shared value pioneer reported headline earnings per share of just over 280 cents. The South African environment looks tough. Medical scheme members lapsing because of retrenchments and affordability. The UK showing some strong improvements across the board, though. Vitality Health growing members in SME, individual and corporate. Vitality Life policies added 33,000. And bank growth seems pedestrian, but we've got a new CEO coming in. The oh boy information for me was the free cash flow generation. Normally, Discovery have to pay a broker a significant portion of commission up front, which is a cash outflow when a new policy is written. So if new business is slowing, you'd expect a large free cash flow jump. The problem is that we saw the in-force cash flow generation was 5.8 billion versus the 15 billion for full year in 2020. If you annualize that, it's down some 23% on an annualized basis, and they aren't paying an interim dividend. Adrian, tough period for you operating through a pandemic, but equally, that's when your business really shines through. Why was the free cash so low?
The free cash, I think, was actually very strong. You're probably comparing to a period where we actually generated quite a bit of liquidity. So we're very comfortable with the free cash. I mean, I think there's been a very strong focus on liquidity just going through a pandemic. I think that's a very, in an institutional structure, I think that's a very important thing to focus on. So through this period, I think liquidity and capital strength has been very strong. I mean, just to make the point, I guess, the operating performance of the business has been quite remarkable. I think the best we've had. So I think what's framed, obviously, COVID is the overarching theme for the entire set of results. But very, very pleased with the operating performance of all of our businesses. So it's actually been, ironically, I think, a very good period.
And not paying an interim dividend, just prudence due to COVID.
We stopped paying a dividend with the onset of COVID, like most other financial institutions. I guess it's just still risk in the air. We have to see how it all plays out. I think we're doing a lot of investing in new initiatives, and they're playing out. So the sense was, you know, we'll review that at every year end, at every interim. Our view at this stage is no rush to do that. Our dividend cover was very, very high anyway. So, you know, we're focusing on growth and investment. So there's no priority on the dividend from our perspective at this stage.
And back to the theme, the overarching theme is COVID, clearly. And the comparison between waves using Discovery data shows that there was a higher impact amongst higher socioeconomic demographics. Are we calling this the matric rage plet effect?
Well, I think for sure, if you look at the, you know, I think the waves will come. And I think now after second wave, there's a lot of population immunity from just levels of infection. Having said that, so a second wave to an extent was inevitable. I think what we see in our data is the mobility during the December period. And we're just illustrating some super spreader events, you know, post-matric that you see. And I think a lot of that happened in December. Generally, you can actually track through the data the effect of that on infection rate. So for sure, and I think the lesson in that is going forward, and hopefully the third wave is much more manageable and a lot less. But going forward, we need to be careful not to continue super spread events, gatherings, as we move into the vaccination period. But I think we are a lot more bullish going forward than what we experienced in the second wave.
And obviously, understanding immunity is an important part of our understanding on when this pandemic will be over, and also of potential impacts of third waves. You reckon that around half of South Africa's population, just under 60 million people, has already been infected. So that would make it just under 30 million people. The number officially is 1.5 million people. So it's a sort of 20 times difference. What gives you reason to believe that the numbers of infections are that much higher?
Well, if you look at the official death numbers of COVID, it's about 40,000. If you look at the actual excess deaths over that time, it's about 140,000. And if you actually look graphically at the data, you'll see that these excess deaths occurred exactly during these waves. In other words, you'll see, you can see quite clearly that the causality must be COVID. So the fact is, we kind of know the number of deaths. We know the mortality rate. So we can work out how many people are infected to generate that number of deaths, in effect. So if you do that, you find that it's, you know, probably over 50% of the adult population of the country. It's not quite 30 million. There's about 52 million. There's a lot of children in that, but it's a big number. So, you know, that's both a tragic situation. The deaths are tragic. I mean, we know that. But on the upside, it means that there's a lot of people that have been infected. And then I think the kind of debate goes to the chance of being reinfected, you know, to determine what's going to happen going forward. So, you know, I think we have a lot of immunity built up. I think the science and the jury's still out as to what those reinfection rates may be. But we're seeing now relatively low, and therefore we remain cautiously optimistic that, you know, the next few months should not see a dramatic change like the second wave, but we've got to get vaccinated. I mean, I think that's where the priority is.
Absolutely critical to roll out those vaccines. And in fact, there was a slide where you look at the likelihood of a third wave and you forecast different scenarios. Obviously, if there's a super spreader during Easter with reinfections, that's a worst case scenario. What we need to see is high risk groups vaccinated before winter here. What is happening on the vaccination rollout? Because I think the president and the health minister have said the vaccine's going to be free for all South Africans. Earlier this year, we heard medical schemes are willing to help government cross-subsidize. There does seem to be a little bit of confusion about who's paying for a vaccine. Can you just shed some light on that? Will your members be paying?
I actually think it's clearing out quite nicely. There's a lot of ambiguity and still a lot of unknowns. But effectively, on the funding side, if you look at the budget, government has allocated sufficient money to fund the public sector vaccine rollout program. If medical schemes pay their way, which I think they should do in terms of the cost of the vaccine, there's sufficient money in public and private to fund the vaccine. So I don't believe funding is an issue at all, frankly. I think the issue really is the issue of getting the, you know, getting supplies, getting the procurement right. And there's a lot in the pipeline that I think has been done. And then the logistics of rolling it out. So I think all things are on the table. The funding is there. I think there's a lot in the pipeline. And there's a huge amount of people working on the logistics, both in public and private. So, you know, I think it's possible we can vaccinate the high-risk groups by winter. It's going to be a hard slog to get there, but I think it's doable. We need to kind of set it as a goal as a country and try and work our way towards achieving it. I think it's critical.
Yeah, critical to avoid those gatherings during the Easter holiday and vaccinate those high-risk groups, the elderly, those with comorbidities. To your members, will your members have to pay for a vaccine? And will your members get a choice of the vaccine? What are your members in for?
The Discovery Health Medical Scheme has set aside a huge amount of money to pay for the vaccine. So it's priced in entirely. Also, the scheme is extremely strong financially. You know, the reduction in healthcare consumption over the pandemic has meant the scheme has built up a huge amount of reserves to be able to afford this. So there's no concern about the ability for Discovery Health members to be vaccinated. It's a prescribed minimum benefit now in law. So the scheme will fund it, members will not fund it. So Discovery members should not be concerned at all. As to what vaccine, I mean, that will be, you know, that will determine what becomes available through the procurement process. I don't believe that's a dramatically important thing. We must rely on our scientists, who are very good, that whatever vaccine you get is probably going to protect you in the right way. So we will, you know, my sense is whatever those vaccines are, Johnson & Johnson or Pfizer or Moderna, you know, the new stuff coming out, if it comes in, it's approved, you know, if it was me, and it will be me personally, ultimately, when I get a chance, I'll take what there is, frankly.
I will too. When will you be comfortable releasing some COVID provisions, given that most of the income statement was hit in June of last year?
I think the provisions are probably appropriate. I mean, we've been very prudent with them. We've rebuilt them to $3.4 billion. I think the one side that has been very conservative or lapses, in other words, we assume that there'd be a lot of falling off of lives. We see the opposite. You know, people are sticking to their Medicare cover, their life insurance, both here and in the UK. So there may be some prudence there, but you know, we paid out $1 billion in life insurance claims over the December-January period. You know, it's tragic that it's all within the provisions, but I think we just want to be prudent about how we go forward. I think the hallmark of our business is about financial strength and solidity, and that people know we are there for them. So, you know, there's no rush to do that. I think we've taken the appropriate approach.
And then turning to the bank, the other big talking point, obviously Hilton Kellner taking over the reins there. There's a new marketing campaign, and there does seem to be a lot of energy around now going into the next phase of growth. You've migrated your base across. How do you now get to 1 million clients?
Well, I think 1 million, you know, if you look at the actual growth, you made the point about the rate of growth. I think we're quite pleased with it. We're doing about 350 new clients to the bank in addition to the migrating clients. So probably about 700-800 accounts a day, which is pretty good going. I mean, that's a fair lick of business. It's in fact on target. We'd like to get to 500 clients or 1,000 a day. We are really scratching the surface now. Post the migration, our brokers and agents are starting to sell. It's taken us longer to get there. So I think we're feeling pretty good about that. It's not the entire, there's a slew of initiatives we're rolling out, new products, new focusing on a lot of the credit side of the bank. So I'm feeling pretty optimistic about the bank's ability to grow. The actual engagement and the deposit levels have been tremendous. So we're feeling pretty good about the bank. I think the next 6 months to a year are very important in its evolution.
Where are you going to compete? Where do you see the strength? Obviously, the shared value model in the Discovery chassis is where you're going to be able to deliver value to your clients. Do you see it as a full suite retail bank, the behavioral credit card being the strength? Where do you see the main competitive strength?
I think throughout the bank. I think the actual, you know, the mobility, the on the face of the mobile, its functionality, its incentives for people to engage in Vitality Money, rates of interest both in saving and borrowing are remarkable. And then the incentives and rewards to do the right thing are incredible. And then the payment structures are amazing. It's a great product to use. You know, so the bank really offers, I think, you know, from the traditional banking all the way through to the incentives and rewards and Discovery Miles are quite unique. I mean, I think our barrier is to get people to understand them, make it accessible. But we're in a world now where branches and physical cash, I think that stuff's gone, you know, COVID. I think the world has moved so quickly digital. So being kind of a full services bank on the mobile, I think is an incredibly powerful proposition. And then you may have seen today, you know, we're using Zoom platforms to service clients. So you can actually, your bank manager is there physically just on the face of the mobile. You know, so there's a lot of stuff in the bank. I think our challenge is to get people to just access it and see it. And I think Hilton and his team will get there quite quickly.
How do you see this theme of COVID accelerating the adoption of digital technology playing into the core strengths of the Discovery Group as a whole, just as you look for the next levers of growth?
I mean, I think there's a lot of things I think COVID will change, but I think certainly in our space, the issue of wellness and health and resilience and all of that is about data, accessing the mobile, you know, all the stuff that we're doing, which I think is absolutely fundamental. But to the core, the model of kind of incentivizing people to live a healthy life is all about digital. I think the world of healthcare is going digital, virtual consultations of doctors and information flow. So all of the stuff and systems and platforms we've built and we're rolling out globally, I think become more and more relevant as we go forward in this COVID world and hopefully post-COVID world.
And then lastly, Adrian, there was the budget yesterday, everyone talking about it. Who would want to be the finance minister steering a country through a pandemic following the 10 years that this administration inherited and what we're trying to do to clean up as a country? Your thoughts on what the finance minister delivered and where South Africa finds itself at the moment?
Look, I think what he did was appropriate and brave and correct. I know it's a tough social budget, you know, but I think we have to get economic growth. And I think it was a responsible budget. I think the symbolism of kind of fiscal discipline is also important in the budget. I acknowledge that there's some tough calls, you know, around kind of spending in certain areas. I think the spend on the vaccine, as I said, was rational. So I think there's some tough calls in that. I think it's appropriate and brave. And I hope, you know, we're rewarded with economic growth that helps all South Africans.
That was Discovery CEO Adrian Gore.